This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So what was it about the Grindhouse, thing which made you want to make a movie out of it?
Well, Quentin is the one who grew up going to these movies the most, but since he's a film collector over the past 12 years and he's had his own theater in his house, he's been showing me these double, triple features, either stuff that he grew up with or stuff that he's discovered and wanted to turn me on to. And it only took that long. I think only about 3 years ago is when I finally dawned on me, like, maybe I should do a double feature. I got really excited about doing a double feature. And when I took the idea to Quentin after Sin City, I said, I thought about doing a double feature, but you should do one and I should do the other. And he said, oh, we got to call it Grindhouse. We got to have fake trailers. And we realized it would harken back to that time period. And I said, wow, you know what? I can actually make the movie. I'll shoot digital, but I'll actually make it look like one of your old prints, because his prints are sometimes all screwed up. And it adds a really great texture to it and a vitality to it that when I go back and see the same movie on DVD and it's all cleaned up, it's lost half of its charm. So I thought, wow, and it'd be really great to use this. Use the damage as a dramatic device and try to use that as another tool in your toolbox. You know?
So are you saying that the DVD is going to look the same way, or are we going to have two versions of it?
Probably have a couple versions of it. I think there might be a version down the line, a triple dip version that says, newly restored, digitally restored footage, newly discovered negative, suddenly it's clean, pristine.
Why horror film?
Well, that was the first. Well, first we came up with the idea of the experience, providing audiences with this kind of heavy showmanship experience of a double feature with trailers in between, because that's how he would show movies at his house. We always had trailers in between and those little interstitials. And then he said, "Well," I said, "Well, what kind of movie should we do first? Action or, you know, comedy double feature?" And he goes, "I think we should do the first one horror, because that's like the most popular genre of those." And I thought, "Well, I have a zombie script I started 10 years ago. Back before the zombie wave hit, I was had it around the time of The Faculty. I was telling the actors of The Faculty, I ran a zombie script. You guys got to be in. There's a bunch of characters. I got all excited because I said, zombie movies are dead, but they're going to come back. I know they are. Everything always comes back. And believe it or not, zombie movies are going to come back. We got to be first. And so we're on the train, you know, several years before the zombie movies did come back. I never finished the script and was like kicking myself when the zombie wave came back and went. But when he said, let's do it horror, I thought, well, I always wanted to do some of these ideas that I didn't see get done yet. So it's a good excuse and a good reason to do a zombie movie. And he came up with the slasher one, and that's how we just started going. We just got so excited about this idea that we knew it had to be our next movie.
Can you talk about what was cut out for the double feature that will be back in the international version?
I just had to keep tightening it down. I wanted to get mine to about 80, 85 minutes for the theatrical version, so you wouldn't be just exhausted and ready to go home after mine was over, so that you could stick around for a second movie. So I think my first cut was probably just under 100 minutes. And just other scenes, a lot of the, you know, Sheriff and JT and other stuff with Cherry and the Doctor. There's just other scenes that just fill it out. And Quentin's the same. He's probably got about 30 minutes more. So that would be in the international versions and a future DVD version.
You've got 60s and 70s sensibilities in this whole thing of clothes and everything, but then you also have a lot of text messaging.
Mm-hmm. It's a modern movie. It is a modern movie.
So you did want to pull that in for the modern.
It is a modern movie. It's just deteriorated as if it's a movie. It's supposed to have a timeless quality. They do drive old cars, but it's not supposed to be period set.
It was important to you that you brought in the modern stuff as well.
It just was supposed to be set today.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
okay.
Why the Iraq War is going on.
Yeah,
I mean, it's supposed to be set today. It just looks like a film that's just been. Like, they only made one film print of mine because they didn't have much confidence in it.
Kind of afro, maybe, kind of thing, maybe this.
She was dressed like that in Sin City, and I said, "Can I put her back like that?" And she came back with a different hairstyle. I said, "No, I like the way you looked in Sin City," and it was a modern cut for hers.
Your movie is very influenced by John Carpenter. You actually
and George Romero, yeah.
Do you ever think about approaching him to do a trailer like a John Carpenter?
I was going to go to him to do some music with me, actually. I mean, that was the original idea. But then I had so much fun doing the music that I kind of just kept it all to myself, you know, and I'd come up with a theme, and I thought, really dug doing it. But no, I thought it should be considered almost like the John Carpenter zombie movie he would have made between Escape from New York and The Thing. So I wanted it to feel like it was from that time period.
How did you feel about the resurgence of, like your hand in the resurgence of Frank Miller and doing Sin City and now with the success of 300 and stuff? I just wanted to know your.
It was just such great work, 300 and Sin City. I mean, I had those books, and I just collected Sin City for so long, I just felt, I got to make a movie about this. And now I know how to do it with the effects. I know I got my own green screen. Let me go shoot it. And I don't know if people are ready for it. It's going to be kind of weird. But I want to see this on the screen. And I just always loved that imagery ever since I first, you know, got turned on to it.
What's happening with the second one?
And so, I was very proud of that, and the fact that 300 could go out and create the imagery of his book. And it's great for Frank, too. I just love that Frank's able to get that. What's happening with the book?
With the second one?
I'll come back to you. We'll be going around.
At one point, when Grindhouse first got announced, you were going to shoot Quentin's movie, but now he's...
I was going to DP his movie originally. He started operating second camera on mine and to get practice for his. And he'd been talking about doing his own DPing for a while, and I told him the best way was just to go and do it, and that I would train him a little bit on Grindhouse. As I shot his movie, I would start training him. But I actually started doing that already on my movie because he was operating second camera. And the thing I worried about most about doing that is that I kind of tend to put the camera in places that I like to put him. And I was afraid that I would start looking less like his movie and more like my movie just because a lot of DPs. I mean, you look at the guy who shot Kill Bill. It looks like a Rob Richardson movie. He shoots the stuff and lights it all the same. It looks just like a Natural Born Killer or one of those types of movies. So, I thought that was the movie that he should go off and shoot on his own. But I couldn't just give him the digital cameras. He wouldn't know what to do with those things. So, he was used to shooting on film. So I said, you should just go ahead and shoot yours on film because you already know how that works. And it'll be more your movie. And then if you screw up, it's like it'll be more Grindhouse that way. And he did a great job. I was really proud of him. He learned so much by doing it. That's how I learned. I learned on the job. So I said, man, just kick him out there and learn on the job.
One little quick question. Bruce Willis kills Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
You have Bruce Willis cast already and then write that? Or is that like... Because who else...
I'd written the... No. I had some other big actor was going to wanted to do the part of the rapist, but he got another job offer. And I was like, wow, I should think of someone bigger to play that bad guy. Let me make his part, but let me give him a Quint-type speech, you know, where he says something really cool that he did, you know, like in Jaws. And so I figured, oh, man, he should... I'll try to get Bruce. I'll call Bruce up. And I called Bruce and said, hey, I got this card. You get to play the bad guy. Because I'd already shown him some early footage I had done with the aging on it, and he just thought it was cool. Said, hey, anything you got, I'll come do it for a day or two. Anything. I'd love to come work with you again. And so I said, yeah, I got a cool part. You're the bad guy, but you get to kill Bin Laden. And he goes, and he said, who better?
From like that worked on these Grindhouse movies from before, like the guy doing the trailers or whatnot, was that like a real voiceover guy from back in the day? Or
no, we got him sound like him though. I got this guy, and it's the funniest thing I've got on my... I wish I had my computer here. I'd play in my iTunes. It's him doing, you know, a Trollmaker Studios production, and then he says, "Okay, guys, so that sounds great. Thanks for it." His real voice is just so light and feminine. You would never know that's the guy doing this very voice. He had such a blast doing it. I think the voice in the Thanksgiving trailer is actually Eli Roth's processed voice. There will be no leftovers. That's Eli.
Do we think we're going to see on my chat that they announced, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to see were we going to see Rob's or are we going
to
see Edgar's?
Possibly. I mean, we got to listen to what fans say when they see the movie. That's kind of the testing ground. But early on, I mean, I'd been riding a machete thing for Danny since 94. Mm-hmm. So when Quentin first mentioned, hey, let's do some fake trailers, I go, well, I know which trailer I'm going to do. I'm going to do machete because I've been wanting to do that for him forever because I always thought he should be the star of his own Mexploitation series, you know. And so I did that one right away as a camera test.
When do you start shooting?
Soon, because it needs to come out when Grindhouse comes out on DVD. So it comes out at the same time. Grindhouse presents Machete. Plus, Three Kicks in the Head, Part 3.
The movie's, question about the movie's goal level. How far were you able to push the envelope?
I just try to make a cool zombie movie and some things that you hadn't quite seen before. And I'd seen zombie movies, and you know that if you pull back and try to make it PG-13, you didn't make a zombie movie. So not that they're zombies. We call them sickos because they're just infected. But, yeah, I needed to have some sections that were like that. And then it kind of goes away after the hospital sequence and turns into a Women in Cages movie. That's when you have that weird stuff with Quentin and the melting member. And it gets a little weird there. But mainly it was just the best thing about these exploitation movies is sometimes you'd be watching them, and you get this experience when you watch Quentin's film festival. You're sitting there, and at some point in one of these movies, you just can't believe what you're watching. You're just like, is this happening? I guess we're all watching the same movie. And it almost feels like a dream. And so you needed this kind of moments, and you want that sort of surreal ideas, and that's what kind of marks a really good exploitation movie. So, yeah, I just had to think for a long time to come up with most of that.
Is Rebel okay around this stuff? I mean, is it like, dad does that, or is he ever kind of creeped out with the zombies or anything?
Or? You know, I took him into the dining area and I said, okay, now you're going to come see some zombies. We've been making jokes. And we talked about doing a kid's movie about zombies. You know, we've been talking about that for a while. And I said, hey, look, here this. And he freaked out when he first saw him. I said, no, come here, come here. Touch their faces. And he saw that they were rubber. Go, look, that's JJ. You know JJ. You know this is Spy Kids. And he was like, and I said, what do you think? He goes, yeah, it's pretty low budge. That was our joke, was low budge this and low budge that. I was like, well, it's not that bad. But no, he doesn't know what happened to him. Because I shot a whole version where he lives, because I wasn't sure which way to go. So he remembers making it all the way to the beach. He's there on the beach with the little animals. So as far as he knows, in his mind, he survived. He has no idea.
Now I was disappointed you weren't in Quentin's.
You
didn't want to. Why didn't you do it apart? Come on, everybody's waiting.
I didn't even think about it.
You didn't.
I never have any time. I'm operating the camera. I'm doing Steadicam, editing on set. You know, doing the catering. After a while, I never really had much interest in that. I like being the crazy puppeteer rather than the puppet.
Can you talk about why it is that you feel comfortable in pretty much all your DVDs to be able to fully explain in detail how you did things, when most filmmakers are like, no, I keep the process within, but you give everything, which is really cool.
It helps you also just clear out your idea, like tell everybody exactly how I did Sin City, and then somebody can go, oh, I'm going to make 300, and then, or you can just do that, and then it helps you kind of clean out the system, so you got to come up with something new for the next one. So, and by the time you're giving that information out, it's a couple of years later from when you first thought of how to do it. So you're kind of onto a new idea anyway. So you might as well, it's better just to give away, you know, the best magicians give away their magic tricks as it forces them to think of new tricks.
Will Frank Miller direct Sin City with you? Because I know mm-hmm. he's doing Spirit.
Wouldn't be at the same time, no.
What did you guys contribute to each other's movies in Grindhouse? I mean, you know,
I gave him his title. He was telling me his movie idea, and he goes, and the guy's driving a car, and it's Death Proof. And I'm like, it's what? It's a Death Proof car. He said, it's a pretty good title. And anyway, he keeps going through, and he says, and then the stunt woman comes over. She's like indestructible. I said, she's Death Proof. I said, you've got to call it Death Proof. And the next day, he goes, I'm going to call it Death Proof. I contributed that. He contributed some dialogue to mine, a few lines here and there. I that was mainly, I hoped he would contribute more. I gave him the draft, and I was like, all right, he's going to add all this dialogue, and he called me back. Said, man, I love the script. I added a few lines. I said, oh, cool. Where were they? It's like two lines. I was like, that's it? Come on, write some more.
Like, some of it seems very influenced by like Marley when she's giving her thing about the needles. It seems like Quentin-esque kind of.
Yeah, really? Yeah, I started imitating him probably a little bit, but no, that was fine.
Is the 10-minute cooking school on DVD when you had JT's barbecue?
Yes, absolutely. That's going to be the big one there, Texas barbecue. I'm going to start it with this quote saying, no Texan ever gives away his barbecue recipe. He takes that to the grave. And it says, 10 minutes cooking school, Texas barbecue. From the grave.
Freddie Rodriguez mentioned that he's not the obvious person to play that kind of role. What was it about him that you thought he could be already?
Yeah, that's kind of strange. I only wrote the script partway before I was just getting lost with so many characters. I thought, I'm just going to start casting right now and then finish the script based on the actors I find so I can visualize them better. So a lot of the script was written for Rose with Rose's characteristics in there, a lot of her personality, she's always talking about her useless talents and her bad luck and people always telling her she should be a stand-up comedian, and a lot of her is in there. Freddie came in and read. The only scene I had for Freddie was the opening scene when he's talking to her in the diner. And he came in with this cool jacket, and he played it really cool. And I thought, wow, this guy's really great. And he's kind of small, so I'm going to make him a badass here. I made that whole part based on how he came in and read. So when he read the finished script, he's like, "You saw me as this?" And I said, "Actually, yeah." I thought it would be very unassuming of you to come in at that level. And I said, I'm going to shoot you kind of short, too, so don't get freaked out. We see the camera way up here, and you step out of your truck for the first time, and you're like this small. But as the movie goes on, I'm going to start lowering the camera, and you're going to get taller and taller. So by the time you're flipping the guns, the camera's on the floor, and you're just like, oh, it's El Rey.
Is that because he's little? You put him on this tiny little bike?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, put him on there. That was already a joke in there. But yeah, he's still looked big on the little bike. I saw those little bikes, and I thought, that's the coolest idea. Sin City 2, if I start shooting it right away, it'd be shooting as soon as June. But I'll know more in a week.
Can you actually talk about your schedule for like the year? I know you have to go, but what are you working on?
Oh, man, I have no idea. I usually, when I'm finished a movie, right when I'm done at the premiere and all that, I take like a week off, then I get antsy, and I already know what I'm going to do next. But I haven't got to that point yet.